The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lowell Tullhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. Keep the music flowing. We'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, checking out the episode, the series. Please do hit the subscribe button so you can keep up with all of the interviews that I put out every single week. In fact, it's three new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists, discover some new ones, and know what's happening in the music world at all the usual spots like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Houndmouth, going to be talking with Matt Myers and Shane Cody about their new album, Good For You. And in fact, we shot this, the video version that you can find on YouTube, we shot this at the very practice space and recording studio that they made the new album, affectionately known as The Greenhouse. Now, the Southern Indiana, well, which is just technically just right across the river from where I am here in Louisville, but the Southern Indiana band takes us inside the characters that populate the songs, tells us about basing the lyrics in the Midwest with a Southern Gothic twist, why they return to the Kentucky Derby in the title track, and how it ties in with the song Las Vegas and Matt's love of poker. Now, Matt and Shane are also going to discuss their misspent youth, how parenthood has changed the band, and co-writing the B-side Some Paradise from a stranger's story as a writing assignment. So let's get into this. It's Kyle Meredith with Houndmouth.
Kyle, good to see you again. It is good to see you.
Yeah. You're back with a brand new record called Good For You. And as we see, recorded right here, back home again, which is... I mean, this sounds great. First off, I'll compliment the poetry on this record. Like, I don't know if you did a lyrics or if you split the lyrics or what, because you're both songwriters, but there's something different. It's a hard question to ask because that's what I'm getting to. Like, you've always been great lyricists, but there's something very poetic about this record. I don't know if you could attribute that to anything specifically.
I spent a lot of time alone upstairs. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I can attribute to anything different. Just reeling through some thoughts and reading some stuff, reading some stories. I always like telling stories.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's populated with characters again. And we talked about this. I mean, you like to write a lot of character-based songs. I don't know if I'm off. I feel like there wasn't as many on the last record, and this is the return. Like, we've talked about seedy characters in the past. Like, who are the people on this album?
Well, some of them are like people we've met, and some of them are kind of just made up characters to embellish a story or something. Some of them, it's me in there. Mm-hmm. I tend to like not write like about myself, so I like kind of deflect my own feelings and mask them.
Yeah. So is there any autobiography with, like, I mean, you've sort of said that, but as far as, like, at some point, if you're writing a story, it seems to me like you would have to maybe look into your own life, and then what, do you just cloud it up?
It's not necessarily like clouding it up. It's like trying to find, it's like trying to get out what I'm as cloudy inside, I guess.
Yeah.
It's kind of like writing's very therapeutic. If that makes any sense.
What about from your side, Jane? I mean, all these songs, according to the credits, are co-written. I mean, a couple of them are even just the two of you all. Like, what was it about this album for you when you came into it? Like, how did you want to approach it?
I feel like I'm just here to help, you know? Like, it's fun to go through these evolutions of these songs that he wrote and just give my two cents every once in a while. And, yeah, I feel like a lot more of you's maybe slipped through in this album in a good way.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah, I tend to write and then bring things to the table. And then it's nice having a group of people that you trust and, like, everybody's on the same page and, like, I'm struggling with this part and everybody kind of hones in and, like, helps out.
The geography is the other part of this. I mean, when you have the characters, but there is so much geography. Every yeah. song takes me to a different spot. Like, first off, what is the America that we're seeing, that we're hearing about on this record? Because there's a lot of America.
It's home base is Midwest on this record. It's like, but I feel like there's like a Southern Gothic, Southern Gothic tendencies. Mm. And like Midwest, everybody's like really nice, you know, like everybody's just, that's the label that the Midwest has. But I feel like there's more of a darkness to it that nobody knows about. Like in the Midwest, nobody's clamoring, especially in this town, like nobody's clamoring to a spot and there's not a set place that's like really cool that everybody's going to. It's like you kind of have to search around for things and you have to like keep your eyes peeled.
How important is it for wherever that song is happening? And again, there's so many different spots, you know, around the country that these songs do took place in. Like, how important is the spot? And I'm thinking in a sense, like, when you listen to Springsteen's Born to Run, you know that that character has to be in New Jersey. Like, yeah. He says it, but that character, his life is like it is because he's in New Jersey.
Right.
Like, how important is that to the characters in these songs for you as to where you place them in the world?
Yeah, it's huge. Like, place is everything.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Like, even like my favorite movies, there's really not a lot happening. Like, there doesn't need to be explosions in movies, you know? Like, it just needs a good story and, like, a place that the people can exist and show why these people are this way.
Well, of course, one of those places, you bring it back to Kentucky and the Derby. Yeah. Well, it sounds like the Derby anyway. I mean, you're talking about the horses. It's not the first time. You had the song for No One, of course, that made the reference that everyone loves to quote when they're, you know, talking about great Houndmouth lyrics. What brought you back there this time?
It was this, that song, Good For You, is kind of like about detachment, I guess, in a positive way. Like, it's like a picture. It's not like, the song's like, it's like writing like a picture.
Right.
And I don't know where it's going to end up. And sometimes I'll write something I don't know, like if it's, I don't know what it's about necessarily while I'm writing it. And I kind of piece it together by the end. But it seems to me like Good For You is about detaching from money and all the connotations that come from like where you're from and like, yeah, I don't know.
No, that's interesting what you're saying though, because your songs do sound fully realized as a story. You know, I was talking about Sam Shepard the other day. You know, Sam Shepard, the actor, also a playwright, the way he writes about people and about characters, that's what I think of. Especially when I'm listening to what you all do, because there's that sense. So it's interesting that you start the journey before you even realize where the journey is going to take it, because by the end of it, like, that picture does look fully painted, you know?
Yeah.
So what brings you back to the Derby a second time? Like, why do you think that's what, other than, you know, we're right across the river. What is it about the Derby that really brings you to want to write about that type of,
yeah, it's like, it seems like it's always a monumental moment, like every year.
Yeah.
Like everybody comes to Kentucky for the Derby. And it's just, it's always been like, I've been a few times, but it's always just been like a big part of my life, but also not really. Like it's just
kind of there.
all eyes focus on Kentucky, like at Churchill Downs.
Yeah.
One day of the year.
Well, it's interesting, the parallel then, because, you know, the lead radio single on this, Las Vegas, you know, and what we're talking about is gambling, you know, it's like, again, you know, whoever these people are in these songs, money plays a big part of it in some way. How do we end up in Vegas?
Like the Derby's always spiking my interest. Like, so is, I've gambled my whole life too. Like, there's a casino down the road. I still go. I still like play poker to like escape. I like love the conversation at poker tables because it's not like any other aspect of my life. Nobody's talking about music. Nobody's talking about like anything. It's right. Just you're just there playing this game, and
they just recently like revamped it too, so it's all like nice and new.
Yeah,
like you don't mind if you fell down on the floor at this point because.
God, I hope not.
Like you'd have to bathe in bleach for a while. The last time I was at the boats,
the boat is gone.
The other point in Vegas, and in the song Las Vegas, and I'm taking this from maybe a press sheet, maybe it's a review or something, the way they talked about it, but there was this idea, especially of Elvis and his arrival in the song, of maybe a misspent youth or just a youth of the past or whatever it is. And I only say that in context of now here you all are grown-ass adults with families, you know, with kids and whole thing. And, like, how much of that makes its way into those little moments in the songs?
Yeah, misspent youth, for sure. Like, you can't escape it, you know? Like, you spend your youth, like, being a degenerate. Not, like, all the way, but, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you spend your youth gambling, doing, like, living that like bar scenes, playing darts, all that stuff, and it's just like part of you. Yeah. And like that song, Vegas, like wrote that in like 20 minutes. Like that one, just like sometimes things just like come out, just like inherent.
How is that? You know, that's usually the obvious question for any musicians, especially when you get kids. Like, has that affected how you all approach your career at this point?
Definitely, yeah. Like, so like I just had my kid right before the pandemic, and Matt had his as well, and like so for me it was like a lot harder to get down to work a lot, and I feel like Matt's got that all figured out on when he can schedule and come down and really put in the work, and then I can come in and like try to record it or you know, help write some.
It helps, like, having kids, like, helps solidify a role, you know, I feel like, and a schedule, because I'd never had a schedule, so it's like, I like living on a schedule now.
Yeah, do they, have they been to the shows? Have they seen you all work?
Yeah, they don't care.
No, of
course
they don't.
No, they don't care. But, like, for me, it's been great, like, having a guitar around the house, because writing is such a, like, a lonesome activity, but like now the kids run around, it's like I can just sit there and write, and it's almost like it rewires the way that I approach songwriting, because it's more freeing now. There's just, I'm doing it in front of people all the time. It's like bath time where I'm just, and they don't care what I'm writing, you know, and it's great. It's nice to strum a guitar in front of people and they don't give a shit about it.
Right.
Yeah. Like you're just in your element trying to figure some stuff out. It just feels homey.
I want to know exactly which song was written at bath time.
You know? Almost every one. Like, parts to every song has been written at bath time.
When I re-listen to this, I'm just going to have that in mind now when I go back and hear this. Back on the road for one more spot, too, and just outside of Vegas, because I don't actually know if the song is there, but we've got UFOs, you've got vampires, and you've got werewolves. And they all make a spot on this record. And it's just, why? What's...
I don't know. It's just like things bouncing around up there. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like sometimes it's as simple as I like this word. I like this image. So like, how is that going to come out? How is that going to fit? And all those characters have like the connotations attached to them. So it's like you can use the characters to explain things without having to really explain it.
Right.
Yeah.
And the, and the metaphysical ends up taking over and showing its play. It makes it for some fun adventures. I do want to hit, there was a song that came out before the album with Some Paradise, mm-hmm. which I thought for a minute, maybe, like, did you all consider that, like, doing a full recording of that?
No.
No. Like, that just lives as it was.
Yeah. Like, somebody had sent us a story, like, they had sent us a voice memo of them telling a story about how they met their fiance and went on a boat trip. And it was like an assignment for a podcast or something. And we had to write a song about this voice memo that came through. So we all just sat and listened to it a couple of times, picked out parts of the story that were attractive, and then it's just assembled words in a way.
Yeah.
And we had musical ideas, so then they started lending them to that, and it came out with a good song, I think. And then that was that. We just sent it to the show for the podcast and released it, and then didn't think about it.
First off, I loved it. It took me a little while to figure out why it was so familiar, and there's a little melody in there, Simple Twist of Fate.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't know if was that just one of those coincidental, like, I mean, it's a great song, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or was that actually part of the plan?
No, I remember like playing around with chords that I've always liked that song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I've never been able to like escape that song. I love it so much. So yeah, I can totally see how that came out.
Yeah. Make It to Midnight on the record. It feel like may I don't know if it comes from the same spot, but it kind of touches that just a little bit less.
Yeah, it's that like high.
Yeah,
little, it's that little high bit,
which is just
push.
A thing. It's just a you know, a thing, but right, it's right. One of those iconic things. You know, like I don't know. I was never really a songwriter, and one of the reasons why is because I always thought I listened to way too much music. Like that's all I would do. It's like no, I can't do that. Can't do that.
Totally. So like writing it, people would ask me like, "What were you listening to at the time?" Like nothing.
Nothing.
Because if I do, it can go bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's gonna be it. I was looking here. Someone brought up us online. I just wanted to hit up fan stuff.
Yeah.
Southside and Sun in the Valley.
Yeah.
Where are these songs now?
I don't know.
What's the life of these songs?
They're on the computer somewhere.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, these are the tracks you played live, I'm guessing?
People,
like, grabbed onto? Like, any plans to record them?
Yeah, I don't know. We released, like, before pandemic or something, or during, we released a...
Yeah, just a video, just a live
video.
Not
even that. We released, like, a thing, like a Live from the Greenhouse on, like, Bandcamp
or
something.
Yeah. That was on there, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
It was just, like, the one-day thing that they do.
We just do stuff for fun sometimes.
And then forget about it altogether. It's like, what is that song?
Yeah. People online, man.
Yeah, they keep track of it. That's the thing. You can't just brush it off because they keep track of
it. Yeah, and they know it. That's fine.
Yeah.
And they're going to keep talking about it, and we'll probably never address it.
That checks. I love this record. I really do.
Thank you.
I mean, you guys know I love what you guys do. I've always been a fan, but there is something that's really resonating with this one with me. At least. So, you know, thanks for doing what you all do. And congrats!
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
That does it.
We out.
Hell yeah.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead. Download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of this, we shot this whole interview inside of their practice space and recording studio called the Greenhouse. If you look up this episode over on YouTube, you'll actually find an entire separate secondary interview of them giving us a tour of the place as well and talking more about the record. So I would recommend, if you're a Houndmouth fan, seeking that up. Now, what you can get here that you can't get on the video versions are all of the past interviews I've done with Houndmouth, and I'm going to include as many of them as I could find, which I think is all but maybe one or two of them. We've talked a lot in the past. So the next stop, part two here, takes us back to 2018 when we discuss the new sounds that made up their record, the Golden Age, changes in their lineup, growing up and having families, and keeping some songs a mystery. This is part two of Kyle Meredith with Houndmouth. Houndmouth, it's been a few years now, and we get the first taste of the return of Houndmouth with a song called This Party.
and all hell breaks loose on the internet. I've had the luxury of knowing you guys, outside of the industry for a little while now, so I sort of knew something was coming. Like, you've been teasing that things are going to be different this time around. And it's been a few years since the last record, but you basically exploded your sound. Like, was that on purpose? Does it feel like that's what happened? That you just said, okay, that was that. To hell
this
with
is
it.
This.
Yeah, to
totally.
Hell with it.
Like, I think that was very intentional. Like, it was just yeah, it wasn't intentional in the sense that we were like, oh, we gotta change our stuff up, but it was just like, oh, well, we just are writing things, and then
how they went. So yeah. And that's the direction that we took everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and the kids with suspenders hated it.
Well, that's the thing, though. When you guys arrived, and it was sort of when a certain genre was in vogue, and you know, it was, I don't know what it was, the folk rock revolution, or
Mumford. Well, because we were obsessed with the band for a really long time,
right.
And we were young, and we were learning how to make music, and using what we, you know, what we knew, what we grew up on. And then eventually we were just like, yeah, we did that. We okay. heard
yeah.
it.
Yeah, the first couple of records were heavily influenced by our influences growing up. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of found out what we wanted to be, like how we wanted to be perceived. And this is the new album.
Yeah, but that's a hard thing for a lot of bands to break out of. I mean, a lot of times once you're kind of put in that box, most bands, a lot of bands at least, they don't feel safe kind of journeying out of that.
For real?
Yeah.
Well, that's like, what's that like?
But it's like... It's not just like being like obsessed with music, but it's like being obsessed with like creative process or like how things work and how things are made, you know? It's like I always relate to like, okay, I wanted to play guitar when I was young, so I was like, oh, I'll play until I get, you know, good, and then I got obsessed with something else, and then now I can play guitar and then use that to do something else.
Right. So as far as, I don't know, it sounds like you're just writing songs, and luckily you arrived at this place, which I do love. I've heard the full album now, and... You know, it's almost carnivalesque in a few points, and you know, like this glam rock carnival is sort of the sound of it that kind of filters through it, which is a lot of fun to listen to. But once you start seeing that the songs don't sound like the old songs, is there that point where you're going, this is going to be really different? Did that moment arrive?
Not really.
Yeah, I feel like the songs are... It's still kind of the same almost subject. It's the same kind of songwriting. It's just wacky
as
sounds.
As far as like structurally, you know?
Yeah.
As far as basic structure, but that's what we played with. So we had like the basic structure, and then we got together with Rado and Sean Everett. So it was like, now how can we mess with the creation of the songs?
And beats. There are lots of beats. And when you hear a lot of beats like that, you start to worry about the drummer.
Man.
Yeah,
hey, Shane.
I was definitely scared when we busted out the Linn drum machine.
Yeah,
and you know, at certain points, there's like a straight time, and there's a half time, and I'm have to figure like I figured it out live. And
there was a very stressful moment between when the album was kind of wrapped and when we had to start rehearsing it. There was like that little period of downtime where we're like, ah, how's this gonna work?
Was it much for Shane for you to adapt to that? I mean, as you're talking about. Was that having to put yourself in a different spot to kind of figure out how this was going to work for you?
I think so. I was very adamant about I would never want to go to a click live. I never want to do that. I never want to play like triggered things. I want it all to be real. Yeah, I'm a feel. I'm a halftime kind of guy. So when I have to play straight time, it freaks me out. Yeah. So it was a lot of practice, like relearning a lot of stuff, and I had a blast.
I was gonna say it's a lot of fun. Like it's to relearn things, not to relearn, but to learn things, to learn how things. How can I say
to learn how things is.
To learn how things is and how they be is great.
People don't think it be like it is, but it do.
There's also the whole thing about how, you know, the bass and the drums always kind of interact, and when you're sort of playing with a machine in a way. Like, how does that change that dynamic of just the feel, as you're talking about?
Yeah,
does it alter it?
I think Zach and I have always been pretty locked in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, as we can be.
As we can.
At least we think
I think
we
it
are.
Brought a very, like, Paul McCartney vibe to it, where like, the bass could actually be, like, I don't want to say focal point, for lack of a better word, but like another thing that you actually hear, as opposed to just backing up the kick drum and all the hits. I think it could be, like, cool melodic.
Funny you said that. McCartney always recorded bass last, from what I heard. And when we finished the song Golden Age, we realized we didn't have a bass on it. And we were mixing it. And we were like, oh, man, we need... And the song was complete, so you need, like, a pocket bass player. So Sean sent the track to Pino Palladino. He was in, like, South America.
Yeah.
And he ended up playing bass on it.
I mean, one of the greatest bass players of our time.
Of our time.
Pino Palladino.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was the very, very last thing put on the song.
Wow.
So getting back to the learning of the songs, that was my bass line that I had to learn. Yeah.
It's just, we were all like, good luck, Palladino. It's like, well, it's not going to be exact. Yeah. But it's just,
And with all respect to Pino Palladino, what we're actually saying here in a long stretch way is you had to learn the parts from the guy who replaced John Entwistle.
Yeah.
Which in itself is just a complete mountain. You know, that's. Are there any other guests while we're on that subject on the record besides Pino?
Yeah, so, well, Rado produced it, and Rado played a lot on it. And, so we were at this, we were at Sonic Ranch in El Paso, and there's a band playing next door, and we went over, and we're like, yeah, we got an idea. We want to bring everybody over individually and play along to a click track for like 7 minutes. And here's the key to the song, but they hadn't heard the song. And they just noodled for 7 minutes. And all these guys kept coming over and doing it.
Yeah.
One at a time.
Yeah. And then, so we had like 20, 30 something tracks. And Sean and Rado played the tracks while we just recorded the song over it. And they would just bring in random moments.
How do you fill out the credits to something like that?
They seemed very happy to just do it.
They
were doing, I think, just kind of a pretty down, slow Nashville country record, so they kind of wanted to get weird.
Chill, cool.
I think they were just super happy to come
7 minutes just go crazy, like, right, with just nothing but the
with
the
your sitar.
And there's a lot of interesting sounds all the way through it. And like I said, you sort of, we all got that right from the beginning. So this party comes out, and as we've alluded to, it's a different sound for the fans, and there's this whole thing, and you guys do a video sort of poking fun at the whole... Whose idea was that?
Matt Folks. He's from Louisville. He's awesome. He's an awesome video maker. And he, one day we just like first day of the responses, we were all like, oh man, people really hate this.
And I mean, did you anticipate that a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. And then when it happened, we're like, oh, this is cool. And then we were like, oh, but it kind of hurts my feelings. And then,
oh yeah, we were like laughing, but deep down we were just so sad.
Well, because we don't focus on the positive comments. It's easy, like it's
nobody does.
It's, yeah, it's a lot of fun to go through and read the negative comments and just kind of have a laugh amongst ourselves. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
So Matt Folks just sent us this video that he had made, and we like it was just spot on.
Yeah,
he nailed it.
And all those people now get a featured spot, you know, right in the spotlight of the of the single.
Promote the haters.
Yeah. You all have always had a really good way of writing about the seedier characters in life. I think we've talked about that in previous interviews on the albums. A lot of the characters that are in Houndmouth songs are from the seedy side of the character track. Are those still alive on this record? Do we hear from those? And if they are...
I think so. I think it's more like a broader perspective of... You always hear about like when you write something... All right, so like if you're writing folk music or something... Like back in the day, people wrote about trains because trains were the jam, right?
Right.
And now it just doesn't make sense. So it's like they're just things to like talk about and write about. And unfortunately, all of the olden time things are connected to this like folk music. Mm-hmm. And then, this is now. And there's
so the characters,
there's things to talk about.
The characters are still seedy, yes, but it's like a. Stealing your cryptocurrency kind of thing.
Well,
as opposed to a train robbery kind of scene.
Modernized.
Let me just bring up the title of that that closing track with World Leader. I mean, are we talking about the seediest character here? Is that what we're getting at?
I don't know, man. That was just like a breakup song. So it was like a couple of my friends were going through a breakup and I wanted to write about it, but I had this hook, World Leader. I was like, I don't want to lose that hook.
But to drop a title like that, by the way, in 2018, you're just setting yourself up for this question.
Right.
Yeah, totally. But then it's fun to, you know.
It can be a personal world. It doesn't have to be the actual world. It can be your bubble, if you will.
Man.
That's just how I interpret it. I mean, Matt wrote that. That's how I interpret it.
That's a really good answer.
How you interpret it, but.
That is very personalized. So, yeah. Everybody should have their own spin on things. If there's a song that's about something, doesn't freaking matter because everybody has to put their own spin on thing at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes us human. in a world of robots that's trying to collect all of our information and analytics and data. You know, they're trying to make us one, but we're all actually separate.
It sort of went in a darker and a lighter spot at the same time.
Exactly.
It did. This is not a question, by the way. I really love the song Golden Age. You mentioned it earlier, especially coming after that opening track, which is, I don't know, it's kind of like an intro track to the whole thing, what it feels like and everything. And then just launching into that, that's a really awesome moment.
Cool.
That's not a question. That's
cool.
That's a statement.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, that'll be edited out. Thanks, Kyle.
It's going to be like, Kyle, like, I hate all the songs. He ruined my day.
He hit his mute button.
I saw it. His cough button. Like,
That was like the first song written. It was it started as like a country song, like a Stonesy country song. Mm-hmm. Then I just put straight time over it and went into it. But I like the idea of writing about characters a lot. And there's a lot of characters, metaphorical characters. Of course, I'm not going to tell you anything what it's about because it's not my.
Because that's what we just talked about.
Yeah. Totally.
It's worth asking though because you know there are parents in the band now.
Yeah.
Do you find that that's making its way into the music? Because for a lot of artists, that's sort of inescapable. You know, whether you're writing directly the song to your child, which can be horrible and sometimes great. Unknown Mortal Orchestra right now has a song called Honeybee, and it's fantastic. Yeah. You know, and that's about his kid and everything. Like most of them are sort of bad throughout history or cheesy.
You wouldn't believe the amount of bad songs I've written about to my daughter, just like a strum and a guitar while she's sitting there like,
I think that's necessary.
Yeah.
But none. Do you know if any of that's made its way into the record?
In a roundabout way, yeah. But I think the approach for this record was more of a whole, like a more of a vast outlook on everybody, instead of just like. Of course, it's all going to be personalized to some degree, but it's mostly like a human collective
concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. How important was stepping away then? Because there was lots of family time. We are now, you played shows, I know, intermittently, you know, especially once you got off tour. But there, what I would say is for the trajectory that the band was on, the success that, you know, was being handed to you as everyone yelled the word pink in the crowd at the same time, you know, to step away for as long as...
I mean, we laugh, but that'll never get old. Like, that's so, like, exciting.
And they do it at the wrong points. They do it too early every time.
I love it every time.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Like, nah, you're too soon. But you know, to have all that going on and then to take a little bit more time than usual, to me, that would feel a little bit nerve-wracking. Was it important to step away? Did you know it was going to take this long between records?
I didn't think it was going to take this long, but I'm super glad that it did.
Yeah.
To really get out of our comfort zone, and then that kind of turned into a comfort zone.
Right.
And, I mean, you can easily get cabin fever, but we would have these breaks during sessions and, you know, go home for a while or go to El Paso and then back to Los Angeles and or play a show. Like, we had a couple fly dates in between sessions, but
yeah, it was weird.
It was a really cool way to figure out this new sound and who we are now as a three piece, and I wouldn't change anything about it. I love the way it happened.
Well, thanks for making the seg there about the three piece, because they definitely want to ask about that. I mean, that was also a big thing for the fans, a big sort of shock out there that you know, the four piece that started, we're talking about Katie Toupin, not in the band anymore. And, you know, and for all the reasons that people leave bands, what was that like to go through as everything is also happening to you guys in the positive sense?
Well, I think it was great to make two records that were well received with Katie. But what happened was when she left, we had to find a creative process for include like with just the three of us, sans one, and it became much more like individualistic, and then we branched out with Rado and Everett, so it's pretty much just a finding a new process,
and then that
in itself became a journey, like
becoming a whole new
finding
band,
finding new things.
Because at this point, what on stage you're seven piece, eight piece,
seven right
yeah.
now,
yeah.
I mean, that's it must feel like a completely new band.
Oh, definitely. Totally.
And it's so much fun playing these new songs and kind of making the old ones a little different, so we're not, you know, playing the same thing. Keeps us entertained.
Yeah.
And we got great guys out of Louisville, you know, Drew Miller and Graham Gardner and Aaron Craker,
Caleb Hickman.
Caleb Hickman out of St. Louis, Bloomington boy now, so we got another Hoosier in the band.
So what we did was we had a... So the two guys, Graham and Drew, were playing sax, and after the record, it was like there wasn't too much sax on the record, so they kind of had to switch up, so they started playing like synth and like drum pads and stuff.
Yeah,
which is cool. Seamless switch.
That's cool. I mean, I've only been able to catch the stuff online so far with the new lineup, but it's a lot of fun. And I mean, it does say a lot for a band because that can shake up anybody, you know, to go through any kind of member change, especially when you're right in the middle of promoting a record in such a way, although I think it was sort of towards the end of the actual promotion cycle. Mm-hmm. But to kind of, you know, be able to pick it up right away and say, all right, let's do this. Like, that's completely commendable. So, yeah.
Well, thank you.
I'm always such a big fan. I'm really glad we did this. And for the record and everything else, congratulations, guys. It's nice to have Houndmouth back.
Heck yeah. Thanks. It's good to be back.
The new studio looks phenomenal.
Thanks. I did this with my own two hands.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You should see the calluses the Kyle Meredith has.
I put on the Ben Harper song, my own two hands, and I did it. That's all I did. I just put on the song.
What a montage.
That's what I did.
What a montage.
And it happened.
Just name drop everyone. This is great.
Our next stop goes back to 2016 when I was talking with the band about their hugely successful year behind their hit single Sedona, their transformation through fashion, and making their own signature cocktail, part three of Kyle Meredith with Houndmouth. Kyle Meredith and you know this group right here of Houndmouth. Hi, guys.
How's it going?
Welcome to 2016, now that we're like 3 months into it and stuff. As I've caught up with you guys, had a really big last year, though. I mean, 2015... Like, I don't know how we measure success these days, but I would say that you guys had, like, a successful year.
We had a mildly successful year.
Mildly
it was a fun year, yeah.
Like, you moved from, like, D-level artist to C-plus level artist, right?
Totally. Passing. Yeah. We're passing. Totally.
It's very gracious of you.
Yeah, well, it's, I'm here for you, man. Yeah.
Don't boost our ego too much, you know?
I'm so proud of everything you guys have done so far, because seriously, when I look back at that, and I got to see some really great Houndmouth shows last year. And you're in the crowd, I don't know, Sedona comes on and a song like that and the whole place, you know, 500 miles away from where we are right now, sing along every word. I mean, those are magical moments. And I know they got to be magical moments for you because they're magical moments for me and I didn't write the song. Like, I had nothing to do with it. Was there a point when you guys saw that happening? Like, do you remember when it all started coming together like that and, like, the people are picking up on this in places that you didn't expect?
Yeah, I think when people started screaming the "so bright and pink" part.
Yeah.
And we didn't have to scream that anymore. That was good, I think, for our throats.
Yeah, that was really helpful.
Thank you for that.
See, that seems like a part of a song that I would have imagined that you wrote specifically for that.
Well, now we're trying.
Now you do it. Like, that's the part you're like, I heard a story about the Lumineers and their song "Ho Hey." Like, they wrote that so the crowd would be doing that the whole time.
We just yelled that, like, randomly.
They were just
that
was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the "so bright and pink" thing is a little awkward when you're playing to 20 people and you're screaming at them directly in their face. "So bright and pink."
It's a little different.
Yeah,
it's great how it came together. Because when you started out, you came up in this whole thing where just by complete chance, all these bands were doing this rootsy sound. And some bands got put in the folk category and some bands got put in whatever, the southern rock category. And you guys were kind of put in a box at that point. And did you struggle to get out of that? Are you still struggling to get out of that?
I think luckily we got recognition because, you know, we're from Louisville and it's a music scene that, you know, people will listen if you're a new band. And I think that that's a really cool part about being from Louisville and being from the South and not being in an oversaturated market of music. I don't think I really answered the question entirely.
No, that's true. That's true.
Yeah,
because
we got put in a box.
But then we got put in that box. Once we got in the box, it was, you know, an effort to get out of it and show that we were different.
Didn't even know that box existed.
Right.
Yeah.
You didn't know what you were until someone else told you that's what you were.
The folk box. The folk revival box.
So Little Neon Limelight comes out and it doesn't sound like the first album from the Hills, but I mean there's still those Houndmouth sounds to it, rootsy.
Yeah.
So what I saw you guys do was this transformation on stage instead. And I don't know if I read it right, but like I saw that as your guys' way to step out beyond that because suddenly I see a glam band on stage.
You don't realize how much influence just visually a band can change perspective.
And it will. It took it far because it was a wholly different thing at that point.
Right. It's like we were still playing the same stuff, but we had bell bottoms on and like sequins and glitter and shit.
And again, I would ask, did you do that on purpose? Was that like contrived? Was that part of it to say?
Yeah. I mean, it was like we went out and had to build like a, I mean, it wasn't like a total contrived thing. Like we're going to trick everybody or like, let's do something different, but still play the same music and see how it comes across. And it was like totally different direction. Started getting like pop hits, you know.
That's what it wasn't, the songwriting that led to a hit and everything. It was just that you wore some sequins,
right?
I don't think that's how it goes at all. I don't think that's how it works.
But it is.
But that's it. I didn't know the secret to it this whole time. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm noticing all the drinks here, and you guys set this down for me before I got here, which was nice of you because you made me a drink. And I should bring this up. You have your own cocktail now. I guess you're just wearing this proudly on your sleeve, but you've got, what is this? What am I drinking?
This is the Houndmouth.
That's original.
Thank you.
That's obvious.
We all went into a room for 28 hours, and this exact when we came out with this, the Houndmouth.
Yeah, right. Well done.
We put it into a band name generator.
So how did you guys come up with it? How did you end up with your own cocktail? Because I guess this is actually going to be at your shows too, right?
Yeah, it's going to be there are a lot of our shows in this upcoming spring tour. We started working with Bullet Bourbon, and it's kind of funny because we've always drank Bullet. Like, it's always been on our rider before, and all of a sudden, we just kind of met up with them, and we kind of worked together on this, so we're going to try to put it out at the shows and see how it goes.
It wasn't just on our rider, but it was, like, my life staple.
That was it? Yeah, so Bullet was the life staple?
Seriously.
The faucet comes on, a Bullet comes out.
Exactly.
It's kind of fun that works out, because it doesn't always work out like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, especially, you can put it on the rider, and you'll get anything else there.
Yeah.
You got to work with who you take. But so you guys have done, so now you do it. Like, it's an actual thing that you guys are together, and they're helping you make this cocktail. I mean, what goes into this?
We'll do a cocktail quarterly.
Quarterly?
Yes.
Yeah.
Four cocktails a year.
And that's all that we will be drinking?
That's all.
For a year? Each.
I don't believe you. I don't believe. How does this make? Anybody tell me? Do you guys, who made this? Do you guys know how this made?
Yeah, it's got a 2 ounces of Bullet, an ounce of orange liqueur.
Preferably Cointreau.
Preferably.
Preferably.
And then it's got half and half tea and lemonade.
Okay. So it's kind of got the Arnold Palmer thing going on.
It does, yeah. And it's very, very easy to drink, too.
It's very easy to drink.
Yeah.
So, I can attest
to that. That's why I like to put it on a table every time. I take a drink and put it on the table, because if I keep it here, it's just like, oh, this is so refreshing. Yeah.
I see more artists doing this. Like, I think Wilco's got, they've got like a beer or something like that. St. Vincent's got her own coffee at this point. I mean, it's a cool thing for a band to do, because this is, I don't know, it's not like you have to do this, but this is just like the cool things that come along with success of any level.
Right, and you'd like to, like, want to choose. Like, partnering with Bullet was awesome, because that, like, we couldn't have handpicked, like, that's what we love. Yeah. So, and it's like, bands don't have to do this, companies don't have to do this, but sometimes it just works out.
Yeah, what a cool partnership. And I know drinking's kind of a part of being a touring musician. I mean, I feel like that's where we, right, I feel like that's where we, you know, all the cool things happen late at night after a few of your signature cocktails have happened. Like, that's when it turns from green room dullness from show to actually rock and roll life. Like, that's what I like to imagine anyway, and don't you dare paint a different picture.
Okay, well, we'll leave you at that, but it's
what happens.
Yeah, but you guys have been on the road forever. Like, ever, I think.
Yeah.
Because the band really started, I mean, what is it? Is it 4 or 5 years at this point?
Four years.
200 dates a year-ish, you know, something around there.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. Do you guys handle it well? Do you guys handle tour life well?
We do. We've been pacing it lately, as of the last record, we started having to pace things, ourselves.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to go out and get caught up, like you said, and just be like, oh, look, I get free booze. Let's go out and get hammered. But you really have to. If you want to maintain that lifestyle, you have to be somewhat responsible with it. You know what I mean? It's really tough to.
But I'm glad. I'm guessing like there has been things that's at least led to something cool happening out there.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of
course. Like what comes to your mind if you look back and you say, "That's tour life in 2015." Like, what happens?
All right. We were in Canada with the Alabama Shakes, and it was a fake birthday for somebody in one of the bands, we won't say, but it was right next to this outdoor water park in Toronto, I believe, and was it Toronto?
Yeah.
And it was shut down, and it was after the show, and we all just kind of snuck back into this water park through an opening in the fence. Somebody had a skateboard. And it was dark. Steve had a skateboard, and it was dark, and we didn't know how broken down this water park was, so we just did anyway. We went up to these big slides, and we didn't actually skateboard down.
I was waiting
so
for.
So we kind of half-assed luged it, you know, one of these.
Yeah, we definitely luged as far as we could luge.
Yeah. There were leaves and stuff. It was... I mean, there could have been a hole, and we all were, like, marching down. Sure. Everyone just could have been.
I don't even know if it was, like, a functional water park.
No, it was. It was, like, abandoned, I think.
You know, it was shut down. We were in a pack of, like, 12 people, which probably wasn't the smartest idea
rolling
to
deep.
Think about either.
I mean, there are ways. They're really... This is going to sound horrible. They're really great stories of how artists have died.
That would not have been one of them.
We all died collectively.
I mean, that would be kind of legendary, because if you need an exit strategy, maybe you've already been there. Maybe you've already done it. You talk about kind of like pacing yourself and figuring out how to do this, though. Both of you all. I mean, there are babies that are a part of life at this point. Like, that changes everything, right?
Yeah. Families. So it's like, yeah, you get good at being on the road, and then you come home, and then you gotta adjust and get good at being at home, and then you just find this perfect balance, and you have to be good at home while you're on the road now.
Yeah.
And then you gotta be good at your job being assertive while you're at home. It's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to be good.
You gotta be good all around.
Well, well-rounded individual.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Katie, you opened a store too this whole time.
Yeah.
And we talk about a lot here, Bermuda Highway, which is this cool mashing of ideas, right?
Right, yeah, it's sort of a fashion meets music store. We sell clothes, and men's clothes, women's clothes, and vintage gear, and records, and
I mean, that seems like a really natural thing for you, but this is like, I mean, having to manage something while you're gone, has that been difficult?
Yes.
I bet it has.
Yeah, it has, but it's going well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
It's hard, but... Yeah. It's kind of a passion.
So, store, baby, Shane.
Yes.
Yeah. What are you up to, dude?
I oversee everything.
Yeah.
I just make sure everybody's doing okay.
I guess every band needs one of those.
And he keeps us informed of what's going on Reddit.
There it is.
He's our personal interneter.
Keep him hip to what's hip.
God, I love you.
Hey.
Well, thank you guys so much for stopping by, and thanks for the booze.
Yeah,
and I can't wait for the next record and the tours. There's more tours, right? I mean, you guys are you still spending most of this year out again?
Leaving March 4th,
mm-hmm.
And then
gone a long time.
Leave again in April.
Jeez,
yep,
that's crazy. All right, Houndmouth, thanks so much. I love
thanks,
you guys.
Love
All right,
you.
We'll see you.
Yeah,
that's it.
High of the fives.
Hi, good one. Hi.
Hey there, it's Kyle Meredith from Kyle Meredith With. After you check out the latest episode of my show, be sure to check out some of our other great programs on the Consequence Podcast Network, including Standing BTS, a bi-weekly podcast covering all things BTS and ARMY, and The Opus, Consequence's original documentary podcast exploring legendary albums and their lasting legacies. So head to consequence.net to listen to these podcasts and many great others.
As the interview train keeps rolling here, now we're back in 2015, talking with Houndmouth about their 2015 album, Little Neon Limelight, distancing themselves from the folk scene, dynamics of writing, new relationships, and Otis Redding, part 4 of Kyle Meredith with Houndmouth. Hi, guys.
Hey.
It's nice to have you back. It's a new record, Little Neon Limelight, which probably isn't enunciated as much as we're doing here.
As it should be.
As it should be. Yeah. The second record, congratulations. You've done a fine job not drifting off into obscurity after the first one.
It's a slippery slope.
So I've heard. So this is great, but it's got to be something, because you always hear of the sophomore slump, the sophomore curse. That ever play in your heads as you're doing this? Like, okay, we've presented ourselves. Like, I remember hearing the story when Crosby, Stills, and Nash, they released the record first, and everybody's like, oh, but can they do it live? And they really had to prove themselves. And it's kind of backwards for you guys, but here it is. You've proven yourself.
Yeah, I think we didn't. We didn't think about it.
That's like, good.
Yeah, because we'd heard about it, but we didn't want to think about that. Yeah.
That kind of stress would just cause us to go apeshit.
So what do you go in? Because these songs, had they been around for a while at this point?
Yeah.
A little bit. When like the first album, it was like personal experience and like people we've met on the road. Because we've always liked the darker side of America, you know, like those weird characters.
Right.
But this was characters we've met and personal experience.
And how dark were the characters that you met versus the ones you made up and imagined?
Well, we romanticize still a little bit, but like my cousin Greg, for instance, isn't, you know, complete. I can't say that word.
Wait, complete?
I thought you did really well, actually.
Yes.
All right. I don't know what you're trying to get
he's
at.
He's not a complete asshole.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got gotcha.
You. See, I can't say
yeah,
that.
No.
But he can be.
So with you guys writing then, I mean, I have heard this is a more personal record, but when you're looking at this, so what you're saying is you're taking it from the people you've met and you're kind of fictionalizing it as you go along. Do these people know that?
Probably now.
Like, I mean, what I'm asking is there actually anyone real on the record that you had to like reach out to and say, I wrote you into a song?
We wrote a song about my cousin Greg, and he's,
and you actually have a cousin Greg?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a physicist, and it's kind of like he would always say, we used to play music with him, he'd always say, you guys are doing great, you're touring, this is what I've always wanted to do. Meanwhile, he's got his master's in physics and is going to be a physicist out in L.A., and to me, that's a pretty awesome thing to do. So we did a song about like the juxtaposition of living a good life in like a straight life, and as opposed to the glitz and glamour of being on the road.
Right.
Yeah.
How did the rest of that song come about? Because everybody sings in that song, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of, we just threw some lines together about Greg that we thought were funny. Yeah. That's the romanticizing part about it. Because he's a great person, and not so much in the song.
Not so much in the song.
Poor cousin Greg. So when that happens for you guys, because, you know, you're in a band where you have essentially four vocalists, like everybody can sing, and is that the only song on the record, though, where you kind of do everybody's in?
Yeah, I think we really wanted a song where we all sing on the same track, and that one was kind of silly and lent itself to us doing that.
Yeah, I'd never seen a show where, like, the focal points would change during. Usually you just have a singer, and it's kind of, you're kind of honed in on one person the whole time, but I think we have, it's kind of beneficial to have multiple singers and songwriters because the show can kind of move around a little bit.
Yeah. Now, as far as the writing, how's the dynamics changed? From like, so you first get together and it's a ragtag bunch you put together. Half of you don't actually play the instruments that you're, you know, playing at the beginning, and you've got to learn to write. How's the writing now changed that you've had plenty of time on the road?
I mean, the first record, it was pretty much written before we became a band, and then we kind of put all the songs together on a record and it sort of made sense and worked together. But this record kind of feels more like a first record for us, I feel like, because we wrote, you know, all these songs in the last year and a half, 2 years.
And we care about them a lot.
Yeah, and they're, you know, there are a lot of songs on the record that aren't, you know, about characters. They are personal songs. And that was kind of lacking, I think, from the first record.
Because there's a lot that's happened in the meantime. I mean, relationships have been made, marriages have happened.
Yeah, we've been through a lot, I think.
Yeah, and how do you do that? How do you do that? Because you're a mid-level band, you know, trying to survive like a bunch of other mid-level bands.
Right.
How have you figured out to carry on a personal life when you're touring 9-10 months out of the year?
Well, it's different for all of us, I think.
Yeah. Personally, figuring it out.
I just have to be invested when I'm home.
Yeah.
100%. I can't, like, it's hard to even justify going out to shows and leaving your significant other behind because then it's like, oh, I know I'm going to be gone for 9 months, but just trust me. I don't want to miss this show.
Yeah.
And I just stay out of the whole relationship.
Don't even mess with it.
That's my plan.
What, did it ever come apart where there was, like, burnout?
Oh, yeah.
Like, what was at that point, like, why are we doing this? oh God, I just want to go back home.
Yeah, like the 8 a.m. lobby call, especially. I had to stop drinking for a while on the road.
Just you poor.
8 a.m. lobby call.
Couldn't drink on the job anymore, man.
I can't be around you guys unless I'm drunk, honestly.
Yeah, so. Really, though, like, shows were getting sloppy because we played the same, we toured for the first record for like a year and a half. So it's like shows are, it's just kind of getting repetitive. So you're drinking and kind of pushing your boundaries. And then 8 a.m. comes around every morning for an 8-hour van ride. And it's just not sustainable.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as good sleep in a
van. No.
One of these days you'll have to graduate to the bus.
One of these days.
The bus. Yeah, right. It's this one. And Sedona is doing great. I know you've actually got a kind of a bona fide hit on your hands, which is kind of nice. Do you hear those when you're writing them? Do you go, that's going to happen? It's going to work. Mm-hmm.
Sedona, we were playing in green rooms a lot. Matt was on an acoustic guitar, and every time we played it, I thought it was just super catchy and fun. It turned out way different than the way it was sounding before, but I liked it, you know.
Did you do any? I
think that's. I mean, we're not trying to write hit songs. I mean, we were just writing songs that we like,
right.
You know.
I guess that's how you have to do it. I mean, you hear the bands that go in there and workshop to death.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
You know? It's
so
like, it's
diluted.
Not, yeah, it seems like everything got really formulated after a while. Like, this is the formula how you write a hit, and you go in, and it's like, try not to think about that. Just like how we try not to think about the sophomore pressure.
Right.
Pressure album.
We actually recorded this record, I mean, it was like a week and a half, and it was completely live. We didn't have headphones. We didn't have click tracks.
Wow. Yeah, and we did the record with Dave Cobb, which is really nice.
Now, why'd you guys decide to do that? Because you headed outside of Louisville this time.
Yeah, well, Zach and I called him one day, and we said, hey, would you like to do the record? And he goes, yes, but I don't want to make another fucking Americana album. And I go, good, because we don't either. And we put our hats on and got weird, as he would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was great having a fifth person in there to see everything from an outside perspective.
Because the Americana thing, though, I mean, that's a real hurdle to get over.
Right.
Because it's not like you guys set out to be part of a scene. It looks like it was just coincidence and timing.
Yeah. We like rock and roll music, and we like American, you know, the American storytelling and soul music. We like everything.
Did that really rub you wrong, as everyone says, oh, here's Houndmouth, and here's the Wild Feathers, and here's
exactly.
You know, Lumineers.
Well, those bands are amazing, but it has developed into kind of a scene. But it's like, I mean, on Sedona, we found some laser sounds, let me put them in. There's no laser sounds on Americana albums.
It's really just Shane going, pew, pew.
There are lasers now on country music albums, by the way, just not in Americana.
The whole hip-hop country thing is really blowing my
mind.
I don't understand how it's...
Eric Church.
Yeah. Like, mainstream country is just pop. It's just pop music now.
It's getting weird, right?
Because it's the same writers. You're talking about workshopping things.
Right, yeah.
You know, you have the same writers down, you know, under the fluorescent lights in a room going, okay, this one's for Taylor, and this one's for, you know, Country Star X, I don't know.
Yeah. Nobody sings like that. Nobody naturally sings, well, nobody.
You do, just now.
Sturgill Simpson does. Sturgill Simpson's crushing.
Sturgill Simpson, you can't understand when he's singing, and that's what makes it great.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know what he's saying. There's another song on the record I wanted to ask about with Otis. Otis? You sing Otis.
Yep.
Is that Otis Redding? Is that a tribute?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was like a love song to Otis Redding.
A love song to Otis Redding.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
I mean, the lyrics, it's just a love song. Otis is probably one of my favorite singers, and I just thought it would be interesting to sort of pretend like
you were sleeping with him.
I'm sure he's pretty good. I'm sure he was pretty good in there, you know?
I dabble in dead.
I dabble in cadavers.
This is not funny. This is
dabble in cadavers.
Oh,
it's a great song.
It is a great song.
That's what I figured. It had to be about him a little bit, but you never actually say his whole name.
Yeah. Well, I think that I would get in trouble if I did. We weren't allowed to name the song Otis Redding.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I'm probably going to get in trouble for just talking about this.
It's the weekly feed. No one's watching.
No, and I thought it was, you know, and then it was kind of a bit mundane when we were recording it, and then it moves up a key, which is kind of like the Dusty Springfield sort of Son of a Preacher Man sort of vibe, which I thought was kind of cool of Dave to throw that.
A lot of the writing was done in the studio. New ideas and
like
stuff.
Like Say It was completely written in the studio, which was cool, because we never got to do anything like that.
And you kind of do get that loose vibe throughout it.
Right.
It
totally works. We were learning the song as we went. That was completely foreign to us, playing a song that style.
Right.
That's anything awesome. Double time freaks me out.
He's got half it down.
Half it down. There we go.
A bit slower. Little Neon Limelight. Little Neon Limelight. A fantastic record. Congratulations, guys.
Thank you.
And we'll see you on the third record when you're doing your synth and electro beats.
Matt's hair will be like blue then.
And from there, it's back to 2013. This time, speaking with Houndmouth during an episode of The Set List, which was a TV series that I did on Wave 3, the NBC affiliate here in Louisville, Kentucky. This is when we just talked about their banner year behind their debut LP and getting prepped for two sold-out shows in their hometown here of Louisville. So it's part 5 of Kyle Meredith with Houndmouth.
Thank you. Congratulations. Two sold-out nights at Headliners, November 29th and 30th. That's got to feel good.
Yeah, definitely.
I can see it in all of your faces, too.
Well, it's great to do it last year.
Yeah.
Just one night, and now we're doing two.
And moving right through, From the Hills Below the City is the debut album, and what, you're about a year into this one now? Is that right?
Not quite.
June.
Yeah.
Came out June.
Well, I guess it's because the EP came out beforehand.
Yeah, right.
It feels a lot longer here than it probably does for the rest of the country. So what's been going on, though? You guys have been nonstop on tour this whole year. I got to imagine that's kind of like a big lifestyle adjustment. I mean, is it?
Yeah.
You get a lot closer with with your bandmates.
We're in a van a lot together.
Yeah, well, it's the whole back and forth, I guess, because it's not like you guys are 3 months out or something like that. I mean, it's go out for 2 weeks and then come back home for 2 weeks and go back out.
Yeah, as opposed to staying home for your entire life.
Right,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But is there something to that? Because that's kind of like that big adjustment every single time.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, I never thought that I would leave Indiana. Technically, you know, I thought I always kind of just be around here, hanging around. We've gone out of the country. We've gone to Europe a few times. That was nice. Get to see things.
Did they treat you differently, the music over there for you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Because I know different genres are kind of treated even differently in Europe. But for you guys, I mean, that's the you know, I know to them it's the great romantic American sound for something like Houndmouth is playing.
Yeah, London. It's like they love guitar solos. And France didn't take too well. Because we're not like a production. We don't put on a show like
crazy lights,
like Miley Cyrus or anything, you know. And I don't think they like that. They want to see a show. Over there.
There was a good response, but it was after the fact. They kind of just sat there with their arms crossed and
judged.
Right.
And then after afterwards, a song. They were like, "Oh, well."
It's a golf clap.
So what's going on right now with this new video? Because you're shooting one, or you're having other people shoot your videos. What is this idea?
It's like a contest idea. We have other people. Submit videos.
This is like the ultimate like broke band's way of getting a brand new video for free.
Exactly.
I don't know who's paying it. I think it's $4,000. I don't know.
Oh, so there is a prize. Like you just don't take it or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get your time at home, and I have to imagine you're working on the next album already.
We've been writing a lot.
Yeah.
Either on the road or by ourselves or whenever we get time. So we worked up some songs when we get some time off. But we assume to be recording in December, January.
Well, guys, thanks so much for stopping by. Looking forward to the show. Once again, Houndmouth, 29th and 30th at Headliners. It is sold out, so I'm sure if you get out there and beg and yell, maybe you can get in, but otherwise, you're going to have to read the set list tomorrow.
And our last stop, once again in 2013 for this one. This time, talking with Houndmouth about them being a near literal overnight sensation, especially in their home area here. The quartet were getting mass amounts of web buzz mere moments after posting their first demos. We talked about them going on tour with everyone from Alabama Shakes and Grace Potter. And this was all shot backstage at Willie Nelson's ranch during the Heartbreaker Banquet. And you hear about their debut LP, Overcoming Comparisons, A Year in the Spotlight, and getting a beer named after them too. Part 6 of Kyle Meredith with Houndmouth.
And here we are in this cactus-laden. We're at Willie Nelson's ranch, guys.
Who'd have thunk?
This is what your tour does for you. I imagine it puts you in places like this all the time, actually.
Oh yeah, every day.
Only the prettiest of places.
Only the prettiest. Well, it is. You guys are like the great study, like a National Geographic documentary right now of band on the rise. That old silly cliche term, but it's fun because right now you kind of get to see you guys learning on the job. Which is probably, I'm guessing, what it feels like. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Never know what we're doing, really. Definitely learning as we go.
Yeah.
But you get put out, you guys have been the undercards for some great bands so far. Backing up, you released an EP last year, and you've been a band at this point now for a little over a year and a half, or about a year and a half, I guess. So, you know, that's a nice whirlwind. That's no pressure at all. So what happens, though? You release the EP, it comes out. This is after a bit of an internet buzz. Why don't you guys actually tell us the quick story?
I recorded some songs that we all did in my house, just in my MacBook, little Pro Tools rig, and put it up online, and got a little blog buzz, and came down to South by Southwest last year.
Jeff Travis saw us.
Jeff Travis from Rough Trade saw us, and talked with them for a little bit, and they decided to put out the EP.
Yeah, it's crazy. So you guys get, you go to Rough Trade, the EP goes out, and suddenly the comparisons start rolling in. Now, a lot of bands get compared to a lot of artists, but do you guys find it trying? Because you definitely had you wear your influences on your sleeves. You know, this isn't who's your influence question. You wear them on your sleeves, but when it comes review after review of sounds like, does that get a bit trying when you're really trying to forge your own little mark?
I think so, especially like we got like Mumford and Son comparisons and like...
That's lazy journalism, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, we don't have a single acoustic instrument in our band.
Right. So how do you overcome that? Because, you know, here you guys are working on a new record. What part of it do you guys say, listen, we can, you know, we can salute our heroes, whatever it is, or now we have to try to get away from it?
I don't think being compared is a bad thing, necessarily. Like, because if people dig A, they're going to... hopefully dig B too, so I mean it's not necessarily a bad thing.
We're not like trying to sound like another band, so we just have to try and sound like what we sound like, you know?
But it's a perfect time, actually, for you guys to be sounding like whatever you sound like. It sounds like, you know, I mean, the pendulum of rock and roll usually swings with, you know, whatever sound. But we've hit this stride in the last couple of years where it's this rootsy sound that's coming out. I mean, I don't know really what the question is here, because I don't think you guys could have projected that. It's not like you guys, it doesn't seem like you guys went into it and went...
Like we picked a niche to get into. I think we've all listened to the same stuff growing up, and it kind of came together like it just came together, you know?
Seemed
pretty natural.
So from the few new tracks I've heard, you guys have been doing it live and everything, the sound actually does sound a little bit bigger, whatever that is, even a little bit, we're not going to say pop, but a little bit poppier than that basic root sound. Is that from being out on the road and being on tour with whoever he is? Is that from the stuff you listen to? Or is that just from this natural thing where you guys are going, all right, we did that sound, what's next?
I think are you talking about the EP, like the sound?
Yeah, versus the EP, right.
Yeah, the EP was just really lo-fi, like we couldn't make it sound any bigger with the mics with the mics and stuff that we had. I mean, we liked the way it sounded, absolutely. I think our live show is just louder.
I think the sound guys are getting more accustomed to running sound for us.
We're playing better venues still.
Helpful. Helpful.
My God, when we were playing the place in New Orleans and we had to do our own sound. Like, I was sitting right by this little box thing and I was like, can you guys hear everything? And
there was three mics, so I just like, I'll sit out.
Yes, Brittany Howard, actually, the Alabama Shakes you guys toured with, what was the biggest difference and everything? She goes, well, we have monitors now. And that's pretty great. You know, it's judging your accomplishments in little small increments.
It's funny how much better you can sound when you actually know what the hell it is that you sound like.
Yeah. So once again, here you are a year into it. Is this what you guys signed up for? Are you figuring out that this is exactly what you wanted?
I don't think any of us really, this isn't what we went in. We didn't start playing to do this, I don't think.
Right.
We started playing just because we really enjoyed it. And then it took off very quickly for us.
We
didn't know what to expect.
So this is cool.
But I guess it's more like, who doesn't want to be a rock star? Who doesn't have those dreams of like, man, if I could just make the living at this, you know?
Right. It's great looking at it like that, but like when you're in it, it's kind of, you don't realize like what's going on.
Still like carry all of our own stuff and like it's not
sure.
Like,
so far
carry your stuff.
most of us carry our own stuff, we should say.
Oh, man.
Princess.
And what is it? But the cool things keep happening. You guys come back home and you had a beer named after you. Now, home is Southern Indiana, right across the river from Louisville. Mm-hmm. You know, we do this, of course, but you come. What's this beer? What is this?
It's called Houndmouth. It's a
wheat ale.
Hoppy wheat.
Hoppy wheat, yes.
Hoppy nice. Wheat.
You gotta come
Does it taste
it.
Good?
Yeah.
It tastes great.
Did you guys get to taste it before they put your name on it?
We were involved in how we wanted it to taste. Like, we kind of sat down with them. We're like, we want it to be like this kind of beer. And so they were like, okay, and then...
Well, they're great over there, so they knew what we were talking about, even though we don't.
Well, it's really nice that you guys can even agree on one taste. I mean, that's...
Well,
that's why I hate beer, so I didn't have a say at all.
But like, whatever. He endorses the beer.
It's great. And that's NABC, by the way.
I like beer as long as it tastes like whiskey. That's it.
As long as it tastes like whiskey.
Houndmouth, when's the record coming out? When's the next record coming out? Do you guys got a date yet?
June 4th.
All right. We'll be looking forward to it. Has it got a title? Another self-title? What is it?
From the Hills Below the City.
All right. We're looking forward to it out on Rough Trade. Houndmouth, thank you guys for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Willie Nelson's Ranch, Heartbreaker Banquets.
Woo-hoo! And that's where we'll wrap this in. Honestly, I think that's every single Houndmouth interview I've done except the very, very first one, which I'm going to have to find one of these days. I know I've got it around here somewhere, but it was also one of their very, very first interviews ever. So it's a very young band. We'll look that one up. But I think this is enough to do the trick for today. So thanks to Houndmouth. The brand new record is called Good For You. Thanks to you as well for checking out this episode, and bless you for making it all the way to the end. Please do hit that subscribe button. Again, 3 new interviews every single week at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. After that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots. That's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all three of them at Kyle Meredith, over on TikTok at Kyle M. Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.